From SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, this is Coronavirus, everything you need to know now.
From the Vascular Surgery Show, here's Dr. Todd Berland.
Dr. Jonathan Chow. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
Really appreciate it. For the listeners out there, Jonathan is an anesthesiologist and critical care physician and assistant professor at the University of Maryland School of Medicine and lead author of a recent study looking at their COVID-19 patients and the benefits of aspirin. Thanks again for joining us. I think, you know, as a vascular surgeon, I certainly appreciate the benefits of aspirin, and I'm sure you do in your specialty as well.
Yes, for sure. I think the findings from our study are very promising, especially given the surge in COVID-19 numbers that we're seeing across the country.
Certainly is. And it's amazing when you look at aspirin. This drug is literally thousands of years old. When you go back, you could see the ancient Egyptians used it. Hippocrates had evidence of using this. Of course, they didn't call it aspirin back then. It was just the bark of the willow tree. But for millennia, this bark has been either put into a tea or ground up and ingested in some way, given to women during childbirth to help for pain during that, given for other ailments. And it wasn't until the 1800s that German chemists were able to actually create or identify the salicylic acid portion of aspirin. And actually, this was done by Bayer, a German company, who marketed and made the first generic aspirin. Now, aspirin is their trade name, but even today, as a vascular surgeon, aspirin is one of the most important medications that we prescribe for patients. And Jonathan, I'd be interested to hear about your study, and I'm sure the listeners want to hear as well. You know, for COVID-19, we're looking for any tips and tricks here. It was a rough go for us in New York City here in April and May, and you know, now the numbers are starting to creep back up, and we've learned a little bit about this disease process, and I'm interested to hear about you guys, your experience with aspirin. So give us the lowdown on that.
Yes. So in our study, this was a study that looked back in time. It was a retrospective study. We looked at over 400 patients who were hospitalized with COVID-19, and we took a look at their medical records, and we found that patients who were taking aspirin in the 7 days prior to hospitalization or in the first 24 hours of hospitalization, they had significantly decreased risk of being put on a ventilator and a decreased risk of being admitted to the intensive care unit. And most importantly in our study, we found that there was a 47% decrease in the risk for dying from COVID-19 in the hospital, which is quite significant.
That is obviously really significant. So is this part of your protocol in Maryland when you guys have patients come in with COVID-19? If they're not on aspirin, are patients put onto aspirin?
We don't have it on our formal protocol yet. And part of the reason is because this was a retrospective study that looked back in time. And although there is a association between aspirin use and improved outcomes, we really do need to prove this with a prospective randomized control trial.
That, of course, is obviously, you know, what we like to practice, you know, evidence-based medicine. Do we have time for a trial like this?
Well, yes, we do. And in fact, after our results were published, the investigators from Great Britain, and as you recall, these investigators were involved in the RECOVERY trial, which was the first randomized control trial in COVID-19 to find that the use of steroids may be beneficial in patients who are on oxygen. Mm-hmm. So these investigators actually last Friday added aspirin to one of their randomization arms in their trial. And they're looking to enroll a few thousand patients, and hopefully they will have results from their trial in the coming months.
Certainly very interesting. I mean, even looking at your study with, you know, just over 400 patients, you think if you take patients that are on aspirin, just looking back, just kind of all things being equal, if somebody comes in on aspirin, that usually means they could be older. It usually means they could have some type of cardiovascular disease, and that's presumably why they're on the aspirin. So you're selecting, just from selection bias, a potentially sicker cohort of patients, and for them to have actually done better is certainly very interesting and eye-opening.
Yes, and that is true. We found that patients who were taking aspirin, about 25% of them in our study group, they had a significantly higher rate of having comorbidities such as high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, and kidney disease. And we found that despite having these increased comorbidities, those that were on aspirin actually had better outcomes than those who were not.
How do you think the aspirin is working to help patients?
Yeah, so aspirin is a anti-inflammatory medication, but what sets it apart from other medications like over-the-counter Tylenol or over-the-counter ibuprofen is that aspirin is also a very potent antiplatelet agent, meaning that it will prevent clots from forming in your blood because it is a very potent blood thinner. And as soon as aspirin comes in contact with a platelet cell, it will inactivate that platelet for the duration of its life. And this is why we hypothesized that aspirin may work so well in COVID-19. And specifically in COVID-19, we know that patients who are afflicted with COVID have a significantly increased risk of developing clots. Investigators have found that patients with COVID, they develop clots in their lungs at a rate of 20%, which is double the rate that we find in patients who are afflicted with the flu. We know that on autopsy, these patients with COVID-19, they have these microclots that form in their lungs at a rate that's 9 times higher than in flu patients, and that they have excess precursors to platelets found everywhere from their heart to their lungs to their kidneys. So COVID-19, we all know that it is associated with a high rate of clot formation. And we hypothesize that because aspirin is a blood thinner that prevents the formation of clots, that is why it may work so well in COVID.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, we don't, as vascular surgeons, believe that it works so well when you compare it to things like Coumadin or Lovenox or Heparin or any of these, you know, NOACs or really DOACs, the Xarelto, Eliquis kind of medications. We do believe it's a little bit more mild. You know, it makes you wonder, is a more potent blood thinner better? Or is it something else that we just don't know yet?
Yes. So there is preliminary evidence that more potent blood thinners may be better. I believe Mount Sinai published a research study in the springtime, which found that patients who were on therapeutic anticoagulation, meaning that they were on these more powerful blood thinners, that they also had better outcomes in COVID-19 if they were also on a ventilator. And that was kind of the study that inspired us to look at the use of aspirin, because that study was published very early on in the pandemic, and it got us thinking, well, if potent anticoagulants such as heparin work so well, maybe we could take a simplified drug such as aspirin, and maybe that will have the same effect as well.
Yeah, certainly interesting. I don't want, you know, the listeners to hear this and make it sound so oversimplified. You are doing a great job of explaining this, but, you know, I do want to just comment that, you know, we were aware of that, and at the same time Sinai was dealing or, you know, publishing that, you know, we were, you know, kind of talking and publishing on our own experience here. We had lots of patients who we then gave, after studies like this came out, gave blood thinners to who had significant bleeds in their brain and other areas that were at sometimes fatal. So they died of the bleeding from the blood thinners and not necessarily from COVID itself. So certainly interesting, something that we all have to think about. We do have a caller, Shirley from Connecticut. Hey, Shirley, thanks for calling Dr. Radio.
Thank you for taking my call. And it's really a quick question. When you're talking about aspirin, are you talking about the baby aspirin, or are you referring to the aspirin that people have taken that you had done the research on?
Excellent question.
A regular aspirin.
Yeah, no, great question. Jonathan, what dose of aspirin did you guys use?
Thanks, Shirley, for the question. The average dose of aspirin in our study was 81 milligrams or baby aspirin. There were certainly some people who were started on a larger dose of aspirin in the emergency room if they were also complaining of chest pain or shortness of breath associated with their COVID. But the average dose of aspirin was 81 milligrams, which is the baby aspirin.
Yeah, which is a misnomer because you should never give babies aspirin. We call it baby aspirin because it's the lower dose. And as vascular surgeons, we're kind of always taught and we're in the mindset that the antiplatelet effect, the blood thinning effect, is similar at both of those doses. As you start to go higher in your dosage of aspirin, you get more of that anti-inflammatory effect. You know, aspirin was first used as a pain reliever, and in those higher doses, it does a better job of relieving the pain. But at that baby aspirin dose, again, that 81 milligram or low dose, you get that platelet inhibition, that blood thinning effect that is not much different when you go up to the 325. It may be slightly, but it's not milligram for milligram, kind of pound for pound, so to speak. And what's also interesting is in Europe, they don't have the 81 milligram dose. Their low dose is 100. All of the historic tests and even the modern day studies, all when they look at baby aspirin there, it's 100 milligram dosing, but still considered to be low dose. And that is really what patients are more often on in our vascular world. When we put patients on an aspirin, we are talking the low dose. If we put a stent in or we've done a carotid endarterectomy or they've had a history of some type of lower extremity procedure, we're putting these patients on the lower dose aspirin, the 81 milligrams. It's very rare to have somebody in our world on a 325 milligram dose. So, Jonathan, I don't want to put you on the spot, but kind of do. If you or a loved one had COVID or diagnosed, you know, today, would you start taking a baby aspirin?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question, Todd. Over the summer and in the spring, I was working in the COVID ICU. And one day I came home and, of course, I had a fever, cough, and chills, and I immediately got tested. But also, I'm relatively young and don't have a lot of severe comorbidities. So after speaking with my primary care doctor, we did decide that taking a aspirin for 7 days was the right plan for me. However, we are not encouraging everyone to just go to the pharmacy and just start taking aspirin for COVID. That is not our intention. I think it would be very beneficial for patients afflicted with COVID. They have to speak to their primary care doctor so that they can individualize the risks and the benefits of taking this drug. Because as you mentioned before, taking a blood thinner is not completely risk-free. We know that patients who are elderly and take aspirin for the primary prevention of heart disease, that they have increased bleeding risk of about 1.3 to 1.4 times. So the risk of taking aspirin is not benign.
No, and thank you for mentioning that. And that's why I kind of asked that cautiously, because I don't want listeners out there who are hearing this to say, oh, diagnosed with COVID, or, you know, mom and pop has it right now, tell them to take some aspirin. We worry as medical, you know, professionals to make a blanket recommendation like that without having that randomized controlled data, which, you know, again, we wish we could have tomorrow. And I'm glad these studies are happening right now. I know lots of studies are happening at lots of different institutions. And once this data comes in and works its way into some guidelines, we can make some better recommendations. Right now, it's very anecdotal. And like you mentioned, have your personal primary care physician make that decision. It's a risk-benefit analysis. If you just gave everybody a baby aspirin, you'd have several people that would bleed to death or die from a bleeding complication. So it's not for everybody. A lot of people think just because it's over the counter, it's a benign drug. It's a powerful drug. It's a great drug. It's one of the best things since sliced bread in the vascular world. We love it. It's easily available. It's generic. It's been, like I said earlier, been around for millennia and, you know, packages aspirin for almost 150 years. And it works really well, but you can overdose on it, certainly. You can take it as indicated at the actual 81 milligram dose and still have problems if you are predisposed to bleeding. So I think that your personal doctor needs to make that call. If you're diagnosed with COVID today, you really need to ask your personal physician as whether or not aspirin is right for you. We really don't have many treatments in the outpatient setting for, you know, these mild cases of COVID, which are what 98% of people get. So we're not talking about plasma, antibodies, remdesivir. We're not talking about high-dose steroids that we give for the hospitalized patients. What we're talking about is a baby aspirin that could be potentially taken in the right patient at the right time. And we'll see how that works its way into guidelines. So certainly very interesting. Have you guys taken this any further in your institution? Are you starting any kind of study or looking at more potent blood thinners to see if they're any better? Or are you looking at any other medications to see if they reduce mortality?
Yeah, so particularly concerning aspirin, we are starting to put together a protocol for a randomized control trial because that is the definitive evidence that we need before we decide whether or not to give aspirin to COVID-19 patients. So that planning for the randomized control trial is in its very initial stages. We need to submit a protocol to our IRB and get funding for this and look for multiple sites. So that's where the future aspirin investigation research is headed.
Yeah, certainly interesting. You know, one of the biggest contraindications, or I should say cautions in, when using aspirin are patients with gastric ulcers or peptic ulcer disease. How safe is it for patients with ulcers to take a medication like aspirin?
Well, as we know, one of the two big risks of aspirin is the risk of internal bleeding as well as the risk for peptic ulcers. So you definitely have to balance the risk from its benefits. And that's why we are not recommending that aspirin is for everyone. And really, a physician needs to weigh the risks and benefits in every patient.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, just kind of listing them off the top, what are some patients just right off the top that you think should avoid aspirin therapy?
Well, patients who are elderly, they have been proven to have increased complications from taking the aspirin. There were two large studies published in very reputable journals in the past 2 years, which again showed, one showed that aspirin was associated with increased bleeding risk when elderly patients were taking it for the primary prevention of cardiovascular disease. They bled at an increased rate of 1.38 times. And then there was another systemic review, which also found similar results. Patients who were elderly, just taking aspirin for the primary prevention of heart disease, they bled at an increased rate of 1.4 times. So particularly if you're elderly and if you have a history of peptic ulcer disease, those are the two major populations that would have increased risk from taking an aspirin.
Right. And I would also add on top of that, if you are predisposed to bleeding, there are some bleeding disorders where a small percentage of the population is affected and already has inherent or innate kind of genetic reason for bleeding. Von Willebrand's is the one that comes to mind. Very common in women. I want to say it's somewhere around maybe 5% of women have a form of von Willebrand's that could predispose them to bleeding. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, I bruise very easily. That could be a sign of von Willebrand's. It's usually not the significant kind where people can get just spontaneous bleeding into a joint or into a into your abdominal space or into your head. But it's usually the more mild form where you're just, your platelets don't work very well. And so if you add an aspirin on top of that, your platelets really won't work. And like you pointed out nicely, Jonathan, earlier, is aspirin binds irreversibly. The life of the platelets knocked out. Now, good thing is that, you know, the average platelet has about a 7 to 10 day life cycle. What that means is your body's constantly producing new platelets. But if you take a dose of aspirin today, all those platelets in the body are going to get knocked out for 7 days. Now, by tomorrow, a seventh of those platelets are gone, and 2/7 are gone by the next day, and 3/7, and so on. So you get the picture. But that's why we usually have patients stop aspirin before any kind of surgery where we absolutely want a dry field. So, you know, if you're an ophthalmologist operating on the eye, and somebody's on aspirin, they may want you to stop taking that aspirin 7 to 10 days before, maybe even 14, but if they're really cautious. What they want is not only the aspirin to get out of the body, because the aspirin's actually turned over very quickly. It's probably, the aspirin's out of your body in a day or two, but it's irreversibly inhibited or stopped those platelets. So even though the aspirin's gone, you've got non-working platelets that are floating around there, and you need your body to generate new working platelets. And that's the reason for the stopping that blood thinner 7 to 10 days before your elective eye surgery, just as an example. So, Jonathan, is your gut instinct that aspirin's good and that maybe a low-dose DOAC like a Xarelto may be better?
Yeah, so that is my gut feeling. I personally feel that this evidence provides us a lot of cautious optimism for the potential benefits of aspirin in COVID-19. And I do think that some of the more potent agents, like you mentioned, Xarelto, enoxaparin, or heparin, those also provide cautious optimism for the use of blood thinners in COVID-19. As we know, COVID-19 patients have a very high risk of developing clots, which can be fatal.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this early on. Certainly, this wasn't coming out of China or Italy as we were kind of absorbing the surge of patients. We're learning a lot more now. Just curious, at your institution, what parameters you guys are looking at? We look at a lot of things and we try to interpret all of these inflammatory markers to try and see, you know, which patients may be sicker and which patients need or potentially need to be on higher dose blood thinners. What are you guys looking at?
So for our standard laboratory markers that we get, we are getting D-dimers on every patient. We are getting a CRP or C-reactive protein, as well as a full panel of coagulation markers such as PP, PTT, as well as INR. And those are pretty much the standard coagulation laboratories that we're getting in COVID-19 patients, and we're trending them every day.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, us too. So very, very similar. We've got Angela calling in from New York. Angela, thanks for calling Dr. Radio.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, when someone stops taking aspirin or Coumadin or Eliquis prior to a procedure, is there a great risk or how great of a risk is there to, you know, say, God forbid, having a stroke in that time frame that you're off the aspirin
that's
or blood
a great thinner? Great question, because normally people are thinking, okay, what is the risk of staying on? The risk of staying on is that you're going to bleed during surgery. But Jonathan, you're in a good position to talk about this. What is the risk of stopping that medication like aspirin or another blood thinner before surgery?
Well, it kind of depends on why you're taking the aspirin in the first place. So if someone has a stent in their heart that was recently placed, we usually recommend that they stay on dual antiplatelet therapy for at least 6 months, depending on the type of stent that is in their heart. But if someone is taking a aspirin for prevention of cardiovascular disease, we usually recommend stopping the aspirin between 5 to 7 days before any major procedure.
Is that the same as stopping like a Coumadin or Eliquis? So the individual I'm calling about is a parent who had a quadruple bypass 13 years ago, but he was on the Coumadin, and now he's on the Eliquis.
Yeah, so that's certainly very interesting. Different medications right there. As a vascular surgeon, we will operate on patients on aspirin all day long. I'm operating on patients with vascular disease, and I don't mind the platelet inhibition and the slight ooziness and the increased risk of bleeding, because our vascular patients are at a high risk of having heart attacks and strokes after surgery. So we want to keep the aspirin on board. Whereas, like I mentioned earlier, an ophthalmologist who wants an absolutely dry field to operate on the eye may, or a neurosurgeon who's operating in the brain, does not want any of that on board and may stop that. And like Dr. Chow mentioned, the risks are, if you had a fresh stent in the heart, you could clot off, you could have strokes afterwards. The risk is low, but it's real. And so I keep patients on. Now, Eliquis and Coumadin, different story. You know, that's a full-on blood thinner. I will rarely operate, if almost ever, operate with those medications on board. We'll want to reverse those before surgery, either quickly or gently. And that is a risk stratification. Why are they on that blood thinner? Like Jonathan was mentioning, there's different reasons to be on the blood thinners. One of the most common is atrial fibrillation. AFib patients can form clot in their heart. And low-risk patients have about a 3% per year risk of that clot breaking off and causing a stroke. That's if they're not on anticoagulation. So 3% per year. When you're on anticoagulation, it decreases significantly. And these are for the lower-risk patients, older patients, patients whose heart isn't working very well. That could be a 7 or 8% per year, not on blood thinners. So these patients are on blood thinners. If you stop them for a week or two around the time of surgery, it's a 3% per year risk. And you're just realizing 2 weeks of that. So we're talking like a 0.2% risk of having a clot migrate and go somewhere where it shouldn't go. So we believe the risk benefit favors stopping during a surgical procedure, because that risk of bleeding is so significant and the risk of having a problem from that clot go somewhere is so low in that small window. So certainly an interesting topic, though. Any other thoughts on that, Jonathan?
No, I don't have any other thoughts on that. I think, again, you mentioned that the risk is relatively low per year, 2 to 3% per year. And again, if you stop the Xarelto or the Coumadin about 1 to 2 weeks prior to a major surgical procedure, the risk of a adverse event happening is extremely low when you take into account that the risk during the entire year is 2 to 3%.
Jonathan, that really wraps up our half an hour here. Thank you for calling in. Thanks for your expertise on this. And congratulations on a solid study that's really kind of helping us guide treatment in these COVID patients. I think that your study really sets the stage, like you said, for this prospect of randomized trial to see if aspirin or other blood thinners are really helping these COVID patients. So I really, really appreciate that and appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Todd, for having me on your show.
Get facts, not fear, from SiriusXM's Doctor Radio. Presented by the leading experts from NYU Langone Health. To learn more about Dr. Radio, including shows and schedules, go to SiriusXM.com/Dr. Radio.